So we are scheduled to have class tomorrow also, same time. Excuse me if this presentation is not so entertaining. I'm struggling with it. I'm reading the original Sanskrit text and trying to translate it on the fly, so it's not so easy to slow down and make it interesting. Well, I think they were satisfied having it that far away.
Yeah.
It's not working in the room anyway, it's just recording. Okay. To make it certain, establish as certain, that realization of the pure absolute truth, even in its impersonal feature, is the actual perfection of life. Jiva Goswami points out the comparison to lesser spiritual achievements, or in the Karmakanda process, Brahmanas and others perform sacrifices, Vedic sacrifices, and they enjoy the fruits of their ritual activities. This is not actually spiritual. According to the judgment of our Vaishnavacharyas, spiritual practice begins only with nishkama karma, when one is working, performing his Vedic duties without material desire. But the ordinary Brahmins who are full of material desires, even though they're obeying all the regulations and performing all sacrifices, is not considered spiritual. So, therefore, the apurva, or the unseen, invisible, pious reactions you get from performing Vedic rituals, that's definitely, in comparison to realization of Brahman, is not in any way the ultimate goal of life. The Vishnu Purana describes this. But this does not mean, we shouldn't misunderstand, that the practice of devotional service that's recommended for neophytes to worship the deity and perform various rituals as devotional practice, we shouldn't think that to be the same kind of materialistic activity. the practice of bhakti in the form of worshipping the deity and so on, this is Pancharatrika practice. We're performing Harinam Sankirtan, but other Vaishnava Sampradayas, they emphasize more worshipping the deity, chanting mantras, ritual practices. But it's still devotional service. Because the accomplishments of devotional practice, even on the lowest level, are not the same as the accomplishments of pious reactions from performing Vedic sacrifices, rituals, in the Karmakanda system. Because devotional service is not something that's achieved, that's devotional benefits are not acquired like some material thing. They're not something to be accomplished. Whereas fruitive work is like that. It's mechanical. You do the ritual, you get the result, mechanically. But devotional achievements don't work that way. Only something that is a product of the modes of material nature is something that's produced by material work. Anything that's transcendental isn't created by any activity. In the 11th canto, 25th chapter, Krishna instructing Uddhava makes various characterizations of activities in different modes. And then he also mentions transcendental activities in comparison. Kaivalyam satvikam gyanam. There's different kinds of knowledge in the three modes, but then there's knowledge in the mode of goodness, and then there's transcendental knowledge, Krishna conscious knowledge. So, because devotional practice, even neophyte devotional practice, even ritual devotion, is actually a function of the Lord's transcendental spiritual and internal energy. What actually happens when the Lord is satisfied by your devotional endeavors, then the results manifest. Bhakti becomes revealed. But it's not something created, just as Krishna's Kaviraj says. Svatak Sita Krishna Prema Sajya Kobunai. The propensity to love Krishna is built into everybody's heart. It's not something that has to be imposed. If you're going to sit in the front row, you have to stay, okay? Not run around. Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Koroye Udai. But by practicing, by hearing, chanting, purifying your tongue and other senses and mind, by devotional practice, bhakti reveals itself, manifests naturally. And when bhakti manifests, that manifestation is eternal. It will never be stopped. It's stated that the benefits of practicing devotional service are unlimited and eternal, stated in so many scriptures. Therefore, what differentiates material fruitive activities, ordinary Vedic karma kanda rituals, from devotional practice is that one is not taking shelter of the Supreme Lord in ritual karma kanda practice. Just like violence is normally considered sinful, but there's conditions. If a brahmana kills an animal in sacrifice, it's not sinful violence. You can call it violence, but it's excusable or justifiable violence. If a soldier rightfully engages in warfare and kills somebody, that's justifiable violence. If a doctor, cuts his patient open to save his life, that's justifiable violence. So violence is sinful when it's not justified. Similarly, ritual activity is material when it's not dedicated to the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Okay. So, the benefits you get from material fruitive activity, Vedic ritual activity, is different because the results are not permanent. They'll be depleted. The benefits you get will not last forever. Therefore, should not be considered that you've achieved the goal of life. There are misrepresentations in the Vedas. Apama soma mamita abhuma. We've drunk the soma juice, now we've become immortal. So that's an enthusiastic statement, but it's not literally true. You can achieve the heavenly planets. Is it a problem with the recording? Maybe you want to move the microphone. It's not true. The benefits of material work are just temporary. Now, also, on a higher level, one can graduate to nishkama karma, performing one's duty in the varnashram system free from selfish motive. But that also is not the goal of life. It's just a means to prepare yourself for achieving the higher goal. Without devotion to the Supreme Lord, you haven't achieved your perfection. Although nishkama karma, selfless of the execution of your duty, is considered spiritual only because it leads to actual spiritual life gradually, indirectly. What is the goal to be achieved is something else. It's just an intermediate step toward the goal. But sadhana bhakti is not like that. Sadhana bhakti, we should not deny that sadhana bhakti itself, just the practice of devotional service according to rules and regulations, we should not say that that's not perfection of life. It is. It is the purushartha, paramartha, actual perfection of life. Because even in the stage of practicing, accepting rules and regulations and practicing, this practice is being conducted by the Lord's internal energy. It's the play of the Lord's pleasure potency, even though we're only gradually realizing that. But that's the potency of bhakti. It's that transcendental, even in the beginning stages, even in practice. And we see that even the liberated, perfected sages, they don't give up devotional practice, they continue it. Even those who graduate beyond sadhana bhakti to the spontaneous levels of devotion, they continue their regulated practice. So that means it's not something to be given up. It is also part of the perfection of life. So real mukti, if you can realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have achieved mukti. That is mukti. Seventh canto. This is Prahlad Maharaj preaching to his schoolmates. And he says, Tato, this is number 6 in the booklet. Tato vidvurat parivitya daitya daityeshu sangam vishayatmakeshu upeta narayanam adidevam samukta sangayar ishito apavargaha. Those who are very much addicted to this conception of life are called demons. Therefore, although you are sons of demons, keep aloof of such persons and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan. I'm going to change the next sentence to make it fit what Jiva Goswami is saying. There's two different ways to read this sentence. Don't be annoyed that I'm changing Prabhupada's translation. They keep aloof from such persons and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan, the origin of all the demigods, because taking shelter of Narayan is liberation itself, the desired goal of freedom from bondage of material existence. He's saying here that achieving Narayan, that is equivalent to achieving liberation. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on this verse, explains it. By actually coming in personal contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you get your ultimate liberation, which is the desired goal. Narayan himself is the goal of liberation. But that really means you're being able to see Narayan. You're being able to be in personal connection with him. Otherwise, Narayan already is everybody's super soul. He's already present. What's lacking is our realization of him. So just the presence or the supremacy of Narayan doesn't make our liberation. But when we realize Narayan, the Supreme Lord, then we're liberated. Okay, so this Atma Sakshatkar, this realization, direct perception of the Supreme Soul, comes in two varieties. when he becomes manifest inside your heart, or when he becomes manifest externally to you. Both of them are described with actual examples, case histories, in Srimad Bhagavatam. For example, the example of Narada Muni. This is number 7. Pragayata Swavirjani Tirta Pada Priyashrava Ahuta Iva Meshigram Darshanam Yati Chetasi. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, whose glories and activities are pleasing to hear, at once appeared on the seat of my heart as if called for, as soon as I began to chant his holy activities. So this is an example of a devotee realizing the Lord inside, in his heart. And an example of external realization is in the third canto, 15th chapter, the four Kumaras wander into Vaikuntha and they see Lord Narayan face to face. Te achakshata aksha vishayam swasamadhi bhagyam. They saw as the object of their own sense of sight the treasure, the perfection of their meditational practice. In other words, they saw Narayan right there in front of them. Okay, I forgot to pass around the attendance. Somebody, I think, didn't check it yesterday. Make sure you check for both days. And I don't have a pen. Yeah. Okay. Now, next, Jiva Goswami considers what are the qualifications for each of these two different kinds of realization of the Supreme Lord, internal and external. That there are different achievements, they're not the same, means that what you have to do and what you have to be as qualification for them differ also. If the result is different, then the sadhana, the means, is also different. Different means gives a different result. So, first, how one should be qualified for realizing the Supreme Lord inside the heart. This is described by Lord Shiva in the Rudra Gita. This is his instructions to the Prachetas in Canto 4, Chapter 24. This is number 8 on the list. Nayasya chittam bahir arta vibramam tamo guhayam cha vishuddham avishat yad bhakti yoganu grihitam anjasa munir vichaste nanu tatra te gatim. The devotees whose heart has been completely cleansed by the process of devotional service and who is favored by Bhakti Devi does not become bewildered by the external energy, which is just like a dark well. Being completely cleansed of all material contamination, in this way a devotee is able to understand very happily your name, fame, form, activities, etc. This is describing the qualification of a devotee who is then able to realize the Lord in his heart. His consciousness has become purified, vishuddham, perfectly pure, by the grace, by the potency, the power, influence of devotional service, by devotional practice. And he's no longer confused, distracted by external objects and external interests. His mind doesn't enter the cave of ignorance. That's what we call a muni, a sober sage, self-controlled sage. Okay. Then, the special qualification for you. Comment?
Is that someone on the level of Baba?
Yes, but it's... Yes, we can call it Baba because it's actual devotional realization. But it's in a certain rasa. It's in a meditative rasa. It's not...
You
can fall?
Oh, so it's normally attracted, yes, by the external energy.
Yes, so this is liberation. This is a liberated state. But it's sort of a shantaras state. It's not an active devotional service because you're not realizing the Lord externally. Normally, devotees who are serving the Lord or performing more intimate services, they have some external relationship with the Lord. Those who only meditate on in their heart, they're mostly Shantabhaktas and Shantaras. But it is, yeah, it's Shantabhava. Has to be. Actual liberation, you know, must be on that level. Okay. Okay, now, example of realizing the personality of Godhead externally. Well, the example is given negatively in the Supreme Lord speaking as an unembodied voice to Narada in the forest. Hantasmin janmani bhavan mamam drashtumi harhati avipakva kashayanam durdarshoham kuyoginam. O Narada, the Lord spoke, I regret that during this lifetime you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me. So this is a higher qualification, that they've made substantial advancement in actual practice of devotional service, not just purified their hearts and have some neutral attraction, but they're actually doing service, actively engaged, and they've made substantial advancement in that path. Those who are incomplete in service can't see me. And who are not completely free from all material taints. As I described, level of bhava, on the level of just bhava rather than prema, there may still be some subtle contaminations, very subtle ones, but they have to be wiped out completely if you want to have a direct personal relationship with Krishna. Well, Narayan is talking generally, but he's apologizing to Narada. Well, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to see me. The imperfect yogis, you know, they haven't become fit yet. Well, avipapra kashayana means not completely free material taints. Yeah, kuyogina means unsuccessful or imperfect yogis, and yogis here means devotional practitioners. Prabhupada translates it as service. The word is just yoga in the verse. That's not problematic because, I'm sorry, because he's talking to Narada, who's obviously practicing devotional service. He's not talking to an ordinary yogi. Yes, I'm sorry. No, it just means immature devotional service. If you're following the instructions of a pure devotee and he's engaging you in Shuddha Bhakti, just like we're being engaged by Prabhupada in pure devotional service, not mixed devotional service. Rupa Goswami doesn't teach anything about mixed devotional service in Bhakti Rasami to Sindhu. Although Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Sandarbha does discuss mixed devotional service. But in the Rupanuga path, that's just a theoretical discussion, but in the Rupanuga practice, we have no engagement in mixed devotional service. We go to another Sampradaya, Vaishnava Sampradaya, if you want to practice Karma Mishra, Jnana Mishra Bhakti. The Gaudiya Sampradaya is just for pure Shuddha Bhakti, the Rupanuga line. No, we're practicing. We're practicing the real thing, and we're gradually learning to come up to the standard of it. But what we're practicing is Shuddha Bhakti. But we're practicing immaturely, imperfectly. We're making mistakes, we're deviating in little ways, big ways. But the path we're following is the path of Shuddha Bhakti. So we don't call it, that we're not, we may have desires, but what we're practicing is not Sakama Bhakti. If you want that, you have to go to a different Sampradaya. Okay? Okay, but we have to understand this now. The actual qualification for being able to see the Lord, either externally or internally, is not simply, not only, that your consciousness is purified. That's not enough. Well, what else is required? The actual deciding factor is the manifestation of the Lord's own transcendental potency. the particular energy of his that makes him revealed, that reveals him. He's self-manifest. He reveals himself as he chooses, and he has a personal energy who's in charge of that revelation. Jiva Goswami calls Swaprakashita Shakti, the energy that helps the Lord manifest himself by his own will. And that, the substance, the quality of that energy is his own desire. It's a function of his own personal desire. And what induces that the Lord to manifest that energy, to reveal himself, is the devotional attempts of the person worshipping him. By practice of devotion, Gord, never listen to it. Don't run around. By devotional practice, we encourage the Lord to ask that energy of his to reveal himself. That is what makes it, that it's being graced by that potency only that allows us to realize the Lord, either internally or externally. And our purification of the heart is just a secondary qualification. By the manifestation of that special energy of the Lord, everything is perfectly achieved. As described in the matter of realizing the Lord internally by Sutta Goswami, Bidyate Videya Grantish, Chidyante Sarvasamshaya, Shiyanche Chasyakaranani, Drishta Evatmanishvade. When the Lord chooses to reveal himself, then, as a natural byproduct, without separate endeavor, all the knots of the heart are cut. All misgivings dissolve. And one's material entanglement just disappears. Once you can actually have direct perception of the Supreme Person. And that comes by his grace, by his potency. And also in realizing him externally, same dynamics is there. Described by Chitraketu, when he was offering prayers to Lord Sankarshan in the sixth canto. Nahi Bhagavan Agati Tamidam Twadarshanam Minam Akila Papa Kshaya. This is not at all impossible, O Lord, that just by seeing you, all of my sinful contamination is completely destroyed. I'm sorry, here's Prabhupada's translation. I made up a translation, but here Prabhupada's translation is here. My Lord, it is not impossible for me to be immediately freed from all material contamination by seeing you. Also, Lord Nrisimha told Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh canto, Mam aprinata ayushman darshanam durlabham hime drishva mam napunar jantur atmanam taptum arhati. My dear Prahlad, may you live a long time. One cannot appreciate or understand me without pleasing me. But one who has seen or pleased me has nothing more for which to lament for his own satisfaction. Again, the same point. That if by the Lord's grace, by the influence of his internal energy, somehow or other can get direct perception of him, then one will no more have anything to lament for. For his own, all selfish motivations will simply disappear. And Shrutadeva, the Brahmin of Shrutadeva was the king of the Brahmin of Mithila. Yeah, Bahulasra was the king. Shrutadeva was the poor Brahmin of Mithila. So he offers his prayer to Krishna. Satvam shadhi svabhrityanna kim deva karavamahe. Etadanto nvinam klesho yadbhavan akshigo charaha. O Lord, you are that supreme soul, and we are your servants. How shall we serve you? My Lord, simply by seeing you, simply seeing you, puts an end to all the troubles of human life. And so the points very explicitly made. So thus, by the Lord's being manifest, becoming manifest to one, one's complete purification of heart is accomplished automatically. And A person's senses and all mental faculties become transformed. That special energy of the Lord that has the power to manifest him takes over the devotee. And his own senses and mind become infused by that energy. Now, one enters into the realm of Krishna consciousness, where you see Krishna, you're with Krishna, and you are intimately connected with Krishna. That's all by that special potency that manifests Krishna, that potency infusing your mind and senses. Okay. Hi, Krishna. Next we consider how still we have the phenomenon that even sometimes devotees are able to perceive the Lord in devotion. They've come to that stage. Hare Krishna. But still, they show some contamination in their behavior, in their consciousness. Example like Muchukunda, King Muchukunda. Krishna was speaking with him after he woke up and killed Kalyavana. And Krishna, he had conversation with Krishna. Krishna talked to him, and he recognized who he was, and he mentioned, "You're a warrior, and you engage in hunting animals." So, as Krishna mentioned, he's still involved in sinful activities. You know, hunting animals is sinful, unnecessary violence. But in this case, such an apparent contamination in a devotee who's actually realized Krishna already. Has a special purpose. It's not what it seems to be. What it does, it generates very, very quickly in the devotee an anxiety that he's going to fail to realize Krishna. You know, oh no, I've got this contamination. This stimulates his deeper love for the Lord. It makes him very anxious to be successful in his realizing Krishna. It's a special mood of what we call babishika. This is the rasa of terror, fear, anxiety, fear. Yeah. Fear of failure in devotional practice. This is a stimulus. It's Krishna's arrangement. Some devotee seems to be deviating or something in a slight way. Something wrong. But actually Krishna is allowing it to happen in order to make the devotee more eager, more anxious to realize Krishna. We see examples of devotees like Yudhishthira and the Pandavas. Yudhishthira, as described in Mahabharata, before when he was leaving preparing to leave this world, he had to see hell. You may know that. It's described near the end of the Mahabharata. He had a vision of hell. They saw his brothers burning in hell. But that's not a sinful reaction. Although, a superficial reading of the Mahabharata, someone may think like that. It's explained in the Mahabharata, actually, that this was all just a magical illusion created to make a special effect on his consciousness. This is all explained in the Swarga Aropana Parva of the Mahabharata. Devotee, such an intimate devotee of the Lord as Yudhishthira. Muchukunda may be, someone like Muchukunda, he may not be a perfect devotee. But devotees on the level of the Pandavas, if they seem to suffer sinful reactions, they seem to have some contamination, it's not at all what it seems to be. It's just a superficial appearance. Now what about, we see that during the Lord's appearances, his incarnations on the earth and other planets, it seems like often persons whose hearts are not pure are also able to see him directly, right in front of them. So what is that? So we should understand such realization of the Lord is just a false resemblance of the real thing, a shadow of actual realization of Krishna. Krishna says in the Gita, Naham prakashak sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavritaha. I don't reveal myself to everybody because my yoga maya potency, meaning my material maya, covers almost everybody. Even if I'm there, they don't see me as I am. Also, same thing is stated in the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda. This is number 13 in the book. Yogi bir drishyate bhaktya. Na bhaktya drishyate kvachit. Drashtum na shakyo roshat cha matsarat cha janardanaha. He is seen by yogis with devotion, not ever without devotion. Lord Janardana cannot be seen in anger or in envy. So, you may think that the materialists also see Krishna when he's publicly present, but they don't actually see him. We're going to have a discussion of, not Kamsa, but Shishupal. He's coming up. There'll be some explanation what's actually going on. Basically what's going on is that through most of their lives, they don't actually realize Krishna. So they're thinking of him in hatred. When they gradually become attracted to him by their irregular practice of hating him and thinking about him. And in the end, when Krishna actually liberates them, then they've come to the point of actually being attracted and realizing him. Before that, their attraction is just a shadow. It gradually evolves and turns into the real thing. Normally you cannot, by hating Krishna, you cannot realize him. These are special persons. Kamsa is actually a devotee. You know, he's one of the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha who fell down and had to become a demon for a few lifetimes. Kamsa is one of them. Yes. So, underneath, he's actually a devotee. Anyway. So was Shishupal. Yes. Shishupal was Ravana in his previous life. Then he became Shishupal. Okay. What does it mean that these materialist peoples don't see Krishna? He's right there. And when he performs his public pastimes, like he was on the earth for 125 years, everyone who was in the same place saw him there. He was there. He wasn't invisible. But what it means not to see him, during the time of his manifesting his avatar, this means that, first of all, during the times that he's not manifesting an avatar, when he's unmanifest, that means although he's all-pervading and he's everywhere, he's invisible in general. Okay. But when he's performing his pastimes, and his pastimes are going on, when he's during his avatar, that means that people see him, materialists see him. But even though he's the embodiment of supreme bliss, when they see him, they become unhappy. And even though he's all attractive, he frightens them, repels them. And even though he's everyone's well-wishing friend, they consider him an enemy. So they see him, but they don't see him.
Can you call Duryodhana someone like this?
Yes, definitely. Yes. Anyway, it's going to be analyzed how these materialists who don't can't see Krishna. They come into four categories. We'll discuss that. So their vision, there's some vision there, but their vision is perverted, contrary. They don't see Krishna right. Okay, now, what is the root cause? What's the real reason why such persons, first of all, they fail to see him, and they instead see the coverings created by Yogamaya, a false representation of Krishna? Just like Pandrika, yeah, so foolish. His ministers gave him the idea that he's the real Vasudeva. And then he saw Krishna as an imposter. Now, this Yadu, he's not the real Vasudeva, I am. So this is, gross, false understanding of Krishna, created by Yogamaya. The root cause of this is the impurity of their hearts And the seventh substance of that impurity, or the cause of it, is offenses, especially offenses against Vaishnavas and other kinds of offenses. There's offensive behavior, offensive attitudes, especially Vaishnava aparad. Therefore, their consciousness is polluted. And therefore, they can't see Krishna, even though he's there. Even when he's currently present in front of everybody, such impurity created by offensive attitude toward Vaishnavas is like a covering of hard stone that completely envelops the heart. Vajra, Vitlipa, is like a diamond covering, diamond hard rock covering on the heart. So therefore, when we take the definition of liberation in the second canto, muktir hitvanyata rupam svarupena vivastiti, liberation means to give up all false ideas of who you are and realize who you really are. This doesn't apply. It doesn't apply to such materialistic, envious people. Their seeing Krishna is just a shadow of the real thing. Their vision of Krishna. It's a contrary, mistaken vision of Krishna. It's sakshatkara abhasa, just a shadow. And therefore, it cannot be properly called liberation. It isn't a liberated condition. So Vishnu Purana describes, in the fourth canto of the Vishnu Purana, the situation of Shishupal. He saw Krishna throughout his life. He saw Krishna when he was a few days old. Krishna came to visit him. He saw Krishna many times. But he didn't really see Krishna. His pure vision of Krishna, free from contamination, only came at the very end of his life, when the Sudarshan Chakra was heading toward his head. He took that long to become purified. He had to offend Krishna, verbally 100 times. You know. And gradually, by intense meditation on Krishna, gradually he became purified. And seeing Krishna in the Rajasuya assembly, sending his Sudarshan Chakra to kill him, at that moment he became actually attracted to Krishna. After 3 lifetimes of being a demon, this was his third time being killed by Krishna. Only this time he got liberated, not the other 2 times. Because even though he had his personal contact with the Lord in his other incarnations, Kalanimi first, then Ravana, then Shishupal. The same is Vijay, he took those 3 births. But as Kalanimi he was killed, but because he had no actual attraction to Krishna, he was so hateful and envious of Krishna that his realization and attraction to him was just a shadow, a very dim shadow. So he only got material benefits. He became the most powerful demon in the universe, Ravana. And then as Ravana, he pretty much did the same thing, had no proper attraction to Lord Ramachandra, just thought he was a puny human being, and only thought of him, in contempt. So after being killed by Ramachandra, he also took a very advanced birth. Of course, then he took birth at the end of Dwarpa Yuga, so it was Shishupal was nothing as powerful as Ravana, but still a very great material benefits achieved by being killed by Krishna, but not liberation. Only after his lifetime as Shishupal, he gradually developed actual Krishna consciousness, and in the end, at the last moment, he got his liberation.
What was his first
birth? Kalanimi. Then I think it's Vijay, but I'm not sure. One of the two. Maybe I'm looking for you, because Hiranyaksha should be in there too. Yeah, maybe the first one was not Kalanimi, but Hiranyaksha. Anyway, it's there in the Bhakti Center, but I'm sorry, I got it wrong.
On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, everyone suffers.
Yes.
Isn't it proud that everyone got liberation?
Yes, that's a special power of Krishna that's not manifested by other incarnations of the Lord. Other incarnations, they don't automatically give liberation to those demons they kill, but Krishna only exercises that power. Krishna, and then when Krishna's devotee Arjuna, with Krishna's presence, killed those soldiers, they got liberation. But Lord Ramachandra only gave liberation to a few, and love of God to a few. Other incarnations liberated devotees, but didn't liberate demons. Other incarnations.
So whoever saw
Krishna, anyone who was killed by Krishna or by Krishna's devotee in Krishna's presence, got automatically liberation. Demons, devotees, everybody. But that's only for Krishna. Yes? Kumbhakarna also. Okay, but we got Jaya and Vijaya, and their first birth must have been Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. But I know that Ravana, okay, whoever, you know, whoever is being described as Shishupal, his previous birth was Ravana. That I remember, definitely. Okay, but then Kalanemi is not Jaya or Vijaya, somebody else. Okay, okay, anyway. Yeah, I'm not sure. Looks like we have too many demons for coming from two people. Yeah. So, anyway, I've stated, who was talking here? I don't know, 10th canto, chapter 86. Etaram tonvi nam klesho yad bhavanakshi koshaha gochara. My Lord, simply seeing you puts an end to all the troubles of human life. So, this is not describing those who have committed offenses against Vaishnavas, and therefore their hearts are completely contaminated, hopelessly. It's those who have other kinds of contamination, other than Vaishnava Aparad. Then, simply by seeing Krishna, they can become automatically purified by seeing the Lord in his incarnations. This refers to the purificatory power of just seeing Krishna for those who are not that offensive that they haven't committed Vaishnava Aparad. Okay. Now let's analyze. There are different kinds of contaminated consciousness that prevents one from actually seeing Krishna, even though he's there. There are those who are simply Bahirmukha, Bhagavad Bahirmukha. They're distracted from Krishna, uninterested in him because of material distraction. And then there are those who actually hate him. So you can become distracted or just, you know, ignore Krishna, or you can hate him. Take those who were just distracted from him, whose faces are turned away because of distraction. There are also two subcategories. Those who, even though they get a chance to see him, they remain absorbed in sense gratification and other entanglements. So that distracts them. And then there are those who have an insulting and offensive attitude toward Krishna, who intentionally neglect him or disregard him. For example, when Krishna was present in his incarnation, there were present many ordinary human beings and demigods and others who couldn't fully appreciate Krishna just because of their material, being materially absorbed in various entanglements. But there are also persons like Indra who were disrespectful, had an arrogant attitude toward Krishna, because Krishna is Indra's younger brother in his Vamana incarnation. So Indra was thinking of himself as the big brother and daring to criticize his younger brother. And we get such statements as him from Indra. Krishnam martyam upashritya. These coward men, you know, they're taking shelter of this ordinary mortal Krishna. So this is the category of being having an insulting attitude toward the Lord. Not hateful, but just disrespectful. I mean, those are the two subcategories of those who are just distracted from Krishna. As Krishna stated later to Indra, Krishna told him, Mam Aishwarya, Madando hi, Dandapanim napashyati, Tam Brahmshayami Sampadyo, Yashavamcham Yanugraham. A man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence cannot see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position. That's how Krishna relates to such people who are too proud to pay attention to him or even dare to insult him. I show them my mercy by knocking them down, knocking down their pride. He was talking to Indra. He was directing this to Indra himself. Okay. Now, what about we have the case of the cowherds of Vajra? It seems that they were absorbed in material life. Yeah. Just, you know, taking care of their families and their cows and so busy with so many affairs. Yeah, they weren't performing any sadhana. But their apparent materialistic entanglement was not at all for any selfish purpose. It was all just for the purpose of facilitating their service to Krishna. Whatever they did was for Krishna's satisfaction only. As described by Suta Goswami, Yadama Arta Surit Priyat Matanaya Pranashayas Tat Krite. Everything the cowherds had, everything they did was for Krishna's sake. Their very their homes, their property, their family and friends, their very bodies, their very life were all dedicated just to Krishna's pleasure. Krishner Pritatma Surit Arta Kalatra Kama. They dedicated to Krishna their friends, their hearts, their wealth, their wives, and all their desires, just for Krishna's pleasure. And then we have examples of the Yadavas and the Pandavas. It seemed that in their relationship with Krishna, they had selfish motives sometimes. Or they had family attachments, they had personal ambitions, sometimes quarreled among one another. But such material entanglement was only a false appearance. Such intimate devotees of the Lord never have any actual material contamination. As described in the 10th canto, Shaya sanatana alapa krida snan ashanadishu navidu santam atmanam vrishnayak krishna cheta saha. The Vrishnis were so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that they forgot their own bodies while sleeping, sitting, walking, conversing, playing, bathing, and so on. They weren't even aware of their bodily existence. They were so absorbed in Krishna. That's the Vrishnis, the Yadavas, and then the case of King Yudhishthira, described by Suta Goswami. Kim te kama suraspārha Mukunda manaso dvijaha adijahur mudam ragya kshuritasya yate tare. O Brahmana, the opulences of the king were so enchanting that the denizens of heaven aspired for it. But because he was absorbed in the service of the Lord, nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service. He had so much opulence, so much wealth, so much power, but none of this distracted him. He was only interested in Krishna's pleasure. Okay, so when it's stated later on, 13th chapter of the first canto, verses Evam Griheshu Saktanam Pramatanam Tadihaya Atyakrama Avigyata Kalat Paramadustara. It's described how Vidura came home from his journeys, from his pilgrimages, and was greeted by Yudhishthira and his brothers, and treated like a king, like a welcome guest. and they were very happy together. But then time came for the end of Krishna's pastimes. So it says, thus, for those who were absorbed in family life, griheshu saktanam, and completely distracted by their entanglements, time encroached upon them invisibly. Time which cannot be avoided. So, does this refer? Because it's immediately after the description how Yudhishthir was very happy having Vidura at home. How he, you know, having his grandson Parikshit ready to assume the throne and being secure in his kingdom, he felt very happy. And the very next statement is this. Does it refer to Yudhishthir also? That he was a materialist attached like that? So Jiva Goswami says no. This is only may seem superficially to refer to him, to the Pandavas also, but really it's characterizing Dhritarashtra. And the proof of that is that right after that it's stated that Vidura tadabhi pritya. Vidura, recognizing that time was approaching, the time of the end of Krishna's pastimes, the time of annihilation. What did he do? He went to his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, and started preaching to him. He didn't try to preach to the Pandavas. He addressed his warning to Dhritarashtra only, not the others. So that proves that the Pandavas are not materialists. They had no actual material contamination, even though foolish people may think so. Now, sometimes the special arrangement of Krishna's Leela Shakti, a special arrangement in his pastimes, that it seems that some of his devotees suffer some material entanglement, but that's just part of the pastime. His special pastime potency makes an arrangement that the devotees who are participating in Krishna's pastimes, the devotees who are favorably disposed to Krishna and other devotees who were his antagonists, not just his enemies, but sometimes some of his family members were antagonistic, like, you know, the relatives of Srimati Radharani and others, you know, sort of antagonists in Krishna's pastimes. Both kinds, the protagonists and the antagonists, that they sometimes are made by his Leela Shakti to appear materially contaminated, just to add some spice to the pastimes. Tadlila Madhurya Poshaya, to increase the sweetness of those pastimes. And so even the devotees who are very intimately connected, very dear to Krishna, there's a shadow appearance of their becoming materially attached. For example, it's described how when Putana entered the village of Raja, of Gokula, enchanted, especially the ladies, everybody. They were overtaken by her beauty and didn't suspect at all that she was an evil person. Valgusmita apanga visarga vikshitai manoharantim vanitam jokasam. So they were attracted by her charming smiles, her sidelong glances. they just saw her as a very attractive young woman. And they naively just accepted her without any suspicion. So, but that's not that they were materially confused. It's all an arrangement for the purpose of the pastime. It's shown by a statement a few verses later that in Gokula there's no opportunity for evil influences, especially witches like Putana. You know, they're not allowed to enter. The Yogamaya doesn't let them enter. Nayatra Shravanadini Raksho Gnani Swakarmasu Kurvanti Satvatam Bhartu Yatu Danyas Chatatrahi. So any place, what to speak of Gokula, any place where the devotees are constantly chanting and hearing about Krishna, there's no danger of rakshasas and witches entering. But here's Putana. So she was allowed to enter only by the Leela Shakti. for the purpose of a pastime, she was allowed in. And Yogamaya arranged for the Brijbasis, especially the ladies, to be enchanted by her. But that's not an actual material entanglement. It's all the arrangement of Yogamaya, Krishna's internal energy. Sometimes Krishna's devotees seem to be overcome by Maya. Not just his devotees, but his associates like Balaram, others. For example, Balaram himself. Where was this? 1013. I think it was after the killing of Agasura. And he was confused. You know, Prayo Mayastu Me Bartu. This must, what's going on here, must be. Next pastime. When Krishna bewildered Brahma by manifesting himself as all the coward boys and calves, Balaram was confused. You know, he didn't, you know, looks like there's all these Vishnus here, but he couldn't figure out what's happening. He said, this must be the magic illusory power of my master, Krishna. Nothing else could confuse me. No other power in creation can confuse me, Balaram. So here's a case where he seemed to be overcome by Krishna's Maya, Balaram himself. And also, take the case of Jaya and Vijaya when they took birth as demons. They also, in a big way, seemed to be influenced by Maya. They seemed to become complete enemies of Krishna, although they were actually his devotees. So in the first case, the case of Balaram, or a great devotee, the influence of Yogamaya is very small, very insignificant. In the case of someone who actually becomes the Lord's enemy, like Jaya and Vijaya, then there's a very strong influence of Maya. The difference between the two is that in the first case, like Balaram's becoming confused, he never forgot his relationship with Krishna. Now, his actual Krishna consciousness wasn't covered over. Just on top of that, there was some pastime confusion. But in the case of Jaya and Vijaya, they forgot their relationship with Krishna altogether and just thought of themselves as his enemies. And it's not that Jaya and Vijaya becoming Krishna's, and inimical to Krishna, was caused just by the curse of the Kumaras. Actually, it was arranged by Krishna's own desire. He says, Lord Narayan told the Jaya and Vijaya just before they fell down, Matam to me, this is what I want. Now, I approve of your being cursed and going to the material world. It's actually my intention that this happen. So the real cause of the circumstantial fall down of a devotee is apparently becoming entangled in illusion. The ultimate cause is the Lord's sanction and his desire. Without the Lord's sanction, such a thing would never happen. In their case, because they committed an offense, he was convinced, Narayan was convinced they had to be punished. So for their rectification, he allowed them to be sent to the material world by that curse. Other case, counterexample, is Ambarish. He was being cursed and attacked by Durvasa Muni, another Brahmin. The four Kumaras are great Brahmins. Durvasa is also a great Brahmin. Jaya and Vijaya are devotees. Ambarish is also a devotee, but Ambarish is a better devotee than Jaya and Vijaya, because in that case, Lord Narayan didn't allow the curse of Durvasa to be effective. He sent his Sudarshan Chakra to chase after Durvasa instead. And it's not that the Lord developed a desire to do this to them, just that they could suffer their sinful reaction quickly and come back as soon as possible. Not only for that reason. He had intentions of his own for Jaya and Vijaya to fall down. Yeah, I'm sorry. What I just said? That it's not just that Lord Narayan was thinking, let me let them be cursed, fall down, get it over with, and come back as soon as possible. Yeah, and therefore Lord Narayan sanctioned it. You know, he went along with it. But actually, he wanted it to happen because he had his own reasons. He had things he wanted to accomplish by Jai falling down. And if Jai and Vijay were actually enemies, actually non-devotees, and actually deep in their hearts enemies of the Lord, then other devotees wouldn't be happy to hear about their pastimes. Yeah. It just doesn't agree with the natural, compassionate nature of a devotee to like to see others being punished and suffered. But it's only because these were great devotees who would be rectified by their punishment. Therefore, the other devotees were satisfied to see this happen. Therefore, this superficial appearance of their becoming inimical to the Supreme Person actually served to increase the pleasure, the transcendental pleasure, of the Lord and his other devotees. This is part of his great pastimes. He's going to appear as Varahadev and perform his glorious pastimes. He's going to appear as Nrisingadev. You know, and in the matter of, in a course of punishing these demons, he's going to perform his wonderful pastimes and reciprocate with great devotees like Prahlad. So therefore, Lord Narayan told them as he was sending him off to fall down, Yantam ma baishtam astusham. Don't be afraid. Go ahead. Fall down into the material world. I wish all good for you. Similarly, we have other great devotees. Arjun, Narada, Balaram himself. They seem to exhibit material attitudes sometimes. Anger, envy, and so on in certain pastimes. Like the Shamantaka pastime, like the pastime when Arjuna and Krishna went to visit Mahakala, Lord Mahavishnu, like in the Maushala Lila when the Yadus were fighting one another. They seem to be devotees, and even the Supreme Lord himself, Balaram, seem to be overcome by anger and other material emotions. But that also is just a very dim shadow reflection of the actual material thing. It's not material. It just seems to be. In the case of Balaram and Arjun and other devotees like them, they are influenced by yoga maya to feel something like anger or other emotion. And they do this not understanding what Krishna intends in that case. They're actually confused. But in the case of Narada, when he and other sages cursed the Yadu boys, when they played a joke, they dressed up Samba like a pregnant woman, and Narada and the other sages cursed them that this girl will give birth to a lump of iron that will destroy your dynasty. So Narada seemed to get angry. In that case, Narada knew exactly what Krishna wanted to do. He was, you know, a conscious participant in the conspiracy to do this. So sometimes the devotees helplessly, unknowingly, are influenced by yoga maya, and sometimes they know what's going on. They understand Krishna's plan. In the case of Narada, in this instance, Kopita Munayakshepur, Bhagavat Matakur Vida, specifically stated by Suta Goswami, that these sages cursed the boys, Bhagavat Matakur, knowing very well what the Supreme Lord had in mind to do. Okay, that finishes material for today. I didn't stop for questions, but we can stop now if anybody has anything to discuss. We've got actually 15 minutes theoretically. Yeah. In the Bhagavatam?
In the Bhagavatam, I don't remember any mention of these demons.
Yes? Yes. Yes. I mean, when he took birth as Vritrasura?
Yeah.
Okay, but he was a very special demon. He was very much in a devotional mood. He took birth as a demon, but as described by the Bhavanam, he wasn't influenced by the demoniac spirit. Right. That's what the actual demoniac spirit does to you. If you get influenced by this asura bhava, then you can't think favorably of Krishna. You can't feel separation from him. You can't be attracted to him. You can only be if you feel anything about him, you're just repelled. Someone who gets this asura bhava can only relate to Krishna as an enemy. So this is different. This is not just the category of those who will become confused and ignore Krishna, but these are the people who hate Krishna. To become overcome by the asura bhava means to become a hater of Krishna. And in such a consciousness, you can't be attracted to him properly. You can be obsessed by him, but only as an enemy. No, you can become momentarily influenced by it. You know, there are cases of devotees who, because of serious offenses, persons who are cursed to become like that for many lifetimes. But it can also be a more temporary thing. It can happen to us. If we commit enough offenses, the right kinds of offenses, we can be influenced by this asura bhava. Maybe for some short time, maybe for a whole life, maybe for many lives. Okay. Anything else? I don't want to end on such a negative point. Well, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees, even those influenced by asura bhava can be delivered. In Kali Yuga, we're all influenced. Yeah, the demonic spirit is lurking in everybody's heart in Kali Yuga. Yes? But that's, in general, for Krishna's pastimes to go on, Yogamaya has to exert her influence. Depends on what kind of pastime. If you're just in Vaikuntha, worshipping the Lord in complete awe and reverence, very rigidly, then maybe not much Yogamaya there. But if you want to have an intimate relationship with Krishna, you've got to be confused by Yogamaya and forget that he's God. You know, if you want to enter Vraja Bhava, the ecstasy of Vraja, then you have to forget, you have to put aside the idea that Krishna's God. You can't deal with him as God and have an intimate relationship with him. So that means Yogamaya has to cover your awareness.
At the same time, Yogamaya doesn't let demons into.
That's okay. It's a confusion of terms because Yogamaya has her external and internal aspects. It's the internal energy that's making devotees confused as part of Krishna's, as the facility for Krishna's pastimes. It's the external Yogamaya that's preventing materialists from seeing Krishna even in the holy dham. When Krishna spoke in the Gita, Naham Prakashak Sarvasya Yogamaya Samavrita, he was talking about the material aspect of Yogamaya. You know, what we call plain Maya, that prevents non-devotees from seeing Krishna. In general, that's material Maya. They're both called Yogamaya. They're both the same energy, just different aspects of her. Yes.
When the demons they get liberation, they enter Krishna's body, right?
Yes. Sometimes. Sometimes.
Yes. Some demons
yes.
They enter. And they stay there for a long time.
Theoretically, they could. There are. It's actually going to be described in tomorrow's notes. That this is one of the five kinds of liberation. sayujya. And it's not just the impersonal idea of merging, of losing your identity, but some devotees, I guess especially Shanta Bhaktas, who just want to bask in Krishna's glories, they literally enter his body. Okay, and that's a kind of devotional liberation, although most devotees are not interested in it. And some of the demons actually do that. They enter Krishna's body, and they may even assume a permanent place there within Krishna's body.
But how Krishna can live with demons?
Well, they're not demons anymore. They're liberated. They're purified souls. If they are allowed to enter Krishna's body, then they're completely purified. There's a kind of liberation. They're liberated. They're free of contamination.
But they stay there eternally, forever?
In some cases, maybe. Although most devotees, they're not interested in that. Even if they temporarily get that position, they'll decide to try something else after a while. Only, some devotees, that's what they want. They want to be inside Krishna's body. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself prays. Kripaya tava pada pankaja stita duli sadrisham vichintaya. Please think of me as a particle of dust on your lotus feet. Because that's just figurative. But that kind of attitude can be there. You just want to be, part of Krishna. You want to actually just get absorbed into his body. But, you can't do much active personal service in such a position, being inside Krishna. But some devotees are satisfied just to be inside him.
Also, Krishna finish here, then takes place in another planet, right?
Yes.
So, example of Putana. When Putana left her body, she expanded herself and they went to another planet to continue the Lila, right?
I don't know. It said that she became Krishna's mother.
But also she became Krishna's mother. So she's manifested, herself?
If she actually got liberation, then in the next performance of those pastimes in another universe, someone else is going to have to take the role. There'll have to be someone else will be put into then.
Not this one.
If she's liberated, if she's actually liberated, if it's what it seems to be the description, as the way Sutta Goswami described it, that's what actually happened, then she's liberated. She's not going to become unliberated for the next performance. So someone else will play the part.
Another person.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are plenty of envious people ready to become Krishna's enemies. Mm-hmm. Yes?
How we kill the demon in our own heart?
Harinam Sankirtana. Think of yourself lower than a straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree. You give everybody respect and don't respect any respect. And then you can chant Hare Krishna all the time and all the contamination will be wiped out. Yeah. And we can, if we have any difficulty in doing that, then we should try to serve the devotees in trying to propagate Lord Chaitanya's movement. That will be effective in purifying us. We try other things, but that's probably recommended that we try to preach. Yeah?
It may sound like out of the subject, but it's not quite, because we were talking about, if a demon goes in the body of the Lord, then it becomes spiritual. So how do we understand that brains on Ekadashi are not to be taken because they have power?
Yes. Well, maybe, this warning that, sin personified is sitting inside the grains. Maybe Vaishnavas can say, well, I don't care about that. We eat Krishna prasadam, and so what do we, sin or no sin, I'm going to take it. Vrindavan, the Vrijvasis think we're Vrijvasis, we don't have to observe Ekadasi. But in our line, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked his mother, don't eat grains, don't eat on Ekadasi. So on the bequest of Mahaprabhu, we do that. For us, the reason is simply Lord Chaitanya has asked us. Whether we don't have to worry about the Papa Purusha or not, whether we don't have to take him seriously, but we want to respect the request of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So don't think that. Just think that Prabhupada asked us not to eat grains on a codicil, whatever the reason is. You know, Papa Purusha, you know, I'm not worried about him. Yeah, we shouldn't be concerned about the material warnings. They're to scare the materialists. But we should just, this is our sadhana bhakti. Observing a codicil is a major element of our practice of devotional service. To please. Srila Rupa Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we should try to do it. That's all. Prabhupada never talked about this Papa Purusha. I don't think he ever said anything about it. I don't think Prabhupada ever mentioned this Papa Purusha in the grains. I never remember Prabhupada saying anything about it. Because he didn't stress it. That's the reason why we should avoid it. He never even mentioned it. As far as I know. Yeah, that's a new thing. Devotees found that in some shastras. Yeah. It is for us. Coming from our backgrounds. Anyway, you want to do more? Fine. You want to fast completely? That's also in our line. You can practice. It's not that hard. But we do it because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested it. He didn't ask so many things of us. We don't have a long list of rules and regulations. Only a few things. So he asked us to fast twice a month. At least we should be able to do that. And Prabhupada's giving us the dispensation. You don't even have to fast completely. Just avoid grains and beans. So, why can't we do it even that?
On one side, yeah. He didn't ask much, but on the other side, he said, what you're talking about, he will not enter the house of the ones who is not chanting. 64.
That's another thing that Prabhupada never said. Another thing that I never heard from Prabhupada's mouth. Yes, it's mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavat, but Prabhupada never said it.
I just really like a position that he didn't ask much about Chaitanya Bhagavat. From other side, he said such a statement like...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when he was there 500 years ago, the standard he expected of his followers was more than we can handle now, most of us. The Prabhupada has extended the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, made it possible for us also. Okay, I think we can stop on that note. So thank you, all glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.